dance on the air. We're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dance on the air. We're dance on the air.
Well, welcome to Dad's on the Air for the 28th of April 2009. Got an interesting show coming up. We've labelled it Men's Health and the Rallying Forces. This week we'll be talking with two of the country's leading experts on men's health. If it sounds a bit dull but worthy, think again. These are really vital issues for blokes right across the country, and the whole issue of men's health is a national scandal. Men die earlier. The rate of death, particularly amongst separated men, is six times higher than amongst married men. And it was a Labor Party promise that they introduce a men's health policy alongside a women's health policy. It's been a long time coming. We'll be talking with John McDonald, President of the Australian Men's Health Forum. He's co-director of the Men's Health Information and Resource Centre at the University of Western Sydney. We've had him on a couple of times before, and one of the federal government's men's health ambassadors, which means he's going around basically promoting the issue. There's been community consultation around the country, and we'll be asking questions all about that. We've also be followed by John Roberts. He's the chair of the organising committee for the Men's Health Gathering. This is to be held at Newcastle University in October this year. This is also a great step forward in the whole arena of men's health and just men's issues in general, that we're starting to see conferences on the subject. This includes the 5th National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Male Health Convention, representing an exciting time for Indigenous men when we're looking at chronic health problems in small and large communities right across the country. Concurrently is run the 8th National Men's Health Conference. This is all from the 7th to the 9th of October for that one. You can find out a lot more by looking up workingwithmen.org.au. There's also the 4th National Men and Family Relationships Forum, which will be running concurrently with those other things. More information, as I said, at workingwithmen.org.au. We really did want to say, and this is something that we've unfortunately missed out on, but we really did want to pay tribute to a couple of soldiers who were both fathers and who died recently in Afghanistan, fighting for our freedom, essentially, and for the fact, really, that we can do this program. Now, first of all, Corporal Matthew Hopkins, he was the Australian killed in Afghanistan, was father to a young baby and spent just 4 days with him before being sent back for his second tour of duty. His devastated wife, Victoria, yesterday has paid tribute to her husband. He died during an ambush in the war-torn country. He said Matt had the most important job. He was a father to our son Alex, my husband, and my best friend. He was excited about becoming a daddy. He only got to spend 4 days with our son when he was born before he had to go back overseas. I'm so glad that Matt had the opportunity to meet his son and experience fatherhood. And he was a very nice-looking, blonde-haired chap with just this brand new baby. The pictures are really absolutely heartbreaking to look at. He was the 9th soldier to die. 9th Australian soldier to die in Australia. We'll go to some news now. First up, there's a number of child support community forums being held around Sydney, and I gather they're not as exciting as they used to be, Phil. No. They used to be real huge forums of angst.
Yeah, they used to be, John. There's certainly, I guess there's a lot of fire being taken out of CSA's clients, usually separated dads, due to the reforms that happened last year. However, in saying that, there are still massive problems within the Child Support Agency and with their administration and how they put over their rules from the legislation that's given to them from the Parliament. But in regards to these information nights, there are 4 nights each location, so let's talk about that. First of all, next Monday, the 4th of May at 7 p.m, we have Rooty Hill. It is at the Rooty Hill Senior Citizens Centre. You can get all this information from either the Dad's in Distress website or phone in myself on 0401 426 101. On Tuesday the 5th of May, it's at Penrith at the Family Relationships Centre, starting at 7pm. Rudy Hill also starts at 7pm. Wednesday, it's at Bankstown, the Arts and Crafts Centre, starting at 7:30pm. And on Thursday, right here at the 2GLF building in Liverpool. So this is nights which run in conjunction with Dads in Distress, and so there'll be Dads in Distress staff available as well to talk to anyone who has, I guess, any emotional stuff to deal with as well, because obviously the child support does fuel a lot of that emotion.
So Dads in Distress is directly linking with the CSA in running these nights,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, we do, mate, yep.
One of the best shows we ever did, we showed up with our microphone and we interviewed men and women alike, because both men and women, 50-50, just hated their guts in
absolutely.
The old days, and they'd be up there just going hammer and tongs from the minute they opened this community forum.
Yeah.
So we just ran around outside just saying, what do you think? We would just ask one simple question. How have you found the child support agency, or what do you think of the child support agency? Off they'd go. Made a great show.
Yeah.
And then one of these big, huffy, you know, bureaucrats were going, you can't do that round here. And said, we're going to make an announcement telling people they don't have to. And I said, please, please, make an announcement that we're here. We're very happy to hear what people think.
Yeah, that's it. Stifle our freedom of being able to talk, you know. It's just unbelievable. But, yeah, I've noticed, you know, I've done these information nights a lot over the last 5 years, and probably over the last 2 years, CSA have backed off their security. They used to bring security with them.
They needed it.
You know, so, yeah, well, absolutely they did, mate, because, you know,
Because they were completely, totally destroying people's lives.
That's it. And they think that they can sit back there in their ivory towers and just be protected from it all.
That's Phil York from Dads in Distress. My name's John Stapleton, and we also have in our studio here Greg Anderson.
Good morning, John and Phil, and good morning, listeners.
Webmaster, father-to-be, here he is.
Okay, well, today is the 28th of April is the International Workers' Day of Mourning. Don't know if many people know about this. It certainly doesn't receive the profile of a lot of these sort of special days and weeks, but it's a day to commemorate workers who have died on the job. For you, the listeners may or may not know, on construction sites around Australia, construction workers are going to stop today for a minute's silence to remember their dead workmates. Our construction industry is one of the toughest industries to work in, and statistics show that one construction worker is killed every week in Australia and hundreds more are injured. Spare a minute today to remember the blokes who die on the job building, you know, basically the world, the modern world around us. So, Phil, I believe you've got a story.
Yes, I do. Thanks, Greg. This is from the Daily Telegraph, and the headline reads, Single Dads Spend More on Takeaway Than Books and Education. Single dads spend more on takeaway food and less on books and education than single mums, new research has shown. A study of spending habits by the U.S. Institute for Children and Poverty also found single fathers spent less on toys and education than married parents. Sydney parenting expert and author Jeanette Cater, said a lot of single fathers found it uninteresting and unstimulating to prepare a meal for just themselves and their child or children. Ms. Cater said single fathers would consider taking cooking classes or should consider taking cooking classes or ask women in their life, such as work colleagues or family members, to recommend easy recipes. Instead of buying fast food, they could also look at healthy takeaway options such as buying snap-frozen organic meals for children online. Lone Fathers President Barry Williams believes that Australian dads were more advanced on their children's nutrition and educational needs than the US fathers, and he said his organisation has sent out booklets on how to prepare nutritious meals to their members. So that's that.
I bet you a factor in that, which isn't factored into it, is that a lot of those single fathers are working and a lot of those single mothers are not.
Absolutely.
And so the last thing you feel like after you've been working all day and you get home to your kids if there's a decent takeaway joint down the corner, you just duck down and grab something there because you've been working all day.
You know, in some respect, I actually don't believe what's written there because, you know, I've dealt with a lot of single fathers and they tend to buy the takeaway when they don't have their children, when it's just themselves, you know. And then you know, I hear week after week dads recount that they've gone shopping on the Friday afternoon to supply food for their children over the weekend. So
right, and that's often a social activity with dads. You know, they've got their kids for the weekend, so, you know, cooking pancakes on the Sunday morning, whatever it is, cooking's actually a thing that they want to do with their kids rather than just going down and grabbing some food.
Absolutely, and then when they're home by themselves, when they haven't got their kids, that's when they'll tend to go out and just get the odd Macca's meal or whatever.
Or pizza or whatever.
Yeah, that's it.
Right.
All right, we'll be back in a moment. We'll be talking with one of Australia's leading experts on men's health, John McDonald. We'll be back.
This is the way you left me. I'm not pretending. No hope, no love, no glory, no happy ending. This is the way that we love, like it's forever. Then live the rest of our lives, but not together.
Wake up in the morning, stumble on my life. Can't get no love without sacrifice. If anything should happen, I guess I wish you well. A little bit of heaven, but a little bit of hell.
This is the hardest story that I've ever told. No hope, love, or glory, happy endings gone forevermore. I'm wasted, and I'm wasted every day.
This is the way to keep on pretending. No hope, no love, no glory, no happy ending. This is the way that we love.
Black in the morning, something's on my mind. Can't get no rest, keep walking around. If I pretend that nothing ever went wrong, I can get to my sleep, I can think that we just carried on.
This is the hardest story that I've ever told. No hope, love, or glory, happy endings gone forevermore. Wasted, and I'm wasted every day.
myself no glory, no happy ending.
They grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress. 1-300-853-437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
And welcome back to Dad's on the Air. On the line now, we have from the University of Western Sydney, the President of the Australasian Men's Health Forum and Co-Director of the Men's Health Information and Resource Centre, Professor John McDonald. John, thanks very much for coming on Dad's on the Air today.
Thank you very much for having me, Greg.
It's our absolute pleasure. Now, you've been nominated as one of the government's new Men's Health Ambassadors. I might just let listeners know, for those of you who aren't aware, the federal government made an election promise to develop Australia's very first men's health policy, national men's health policy, and they've been making good on this promise, and they've been consulting with all around Australia, holding community consultations, and as part of that process they nominated maybe about half a dozen men around Australia to be ambassadors to go to these public forums and to promote discussion around the issues of men and their health and how best this policy or the direction that this policy should go in. John, you've been one of those ambassadors. Can you tell listeners a bit about the process and the consultations that you've taken part in so far?
Yes, and although I'm a bit shy of the word ambassador, as you can understand, but nevertheless, as I told the government when they gave it to me, that to give me this job, and it's obviously a part-time, non-paid job, though they do pay the fare for me to travel around a bit. They, as I told them, the ambassador must mean not just telling people what the federal government is thinking, but also telling the federal government what men are thinking. And I hope, to some extent, I'm not the only conduit, but I can be a little bit conduit towards them of the needs of men. And let's face it, it's quite exciting that there should be a national men's health policy. There's never been one. And it's also exciting that there's been a discussion. There is a discussion going on. I hope lots of the listeners have at least been aware of that, that the government put out a discussion paper called Developing a Men's Health Policy for Australia, Setting the Scene. And indeed, there's been various forums around the country where people have been invited to comment on that and to make their voices heard to the government, and some of that's been quite exciting, really.
Now, I might just stop you there. I mean, those of us who work in the area of men's health, it's exciting stuff for us, but some of the listeners may think, oh, it's all a bit dry, and men's health, isn't that just about prostates and, you know, I mean, what's that really got to do with our lives? Do you want to just give a bit of a definition of the way you see health, I guess, in maybe a bit more a broader sense that might make it a bit more relevant? Yeah.
Even before what John McDonald thinks about health, the actual, what makes the document exciting, you're right, it could sound very dry, is that the document talks about this discussion document from the government about man-friendly health services. That's, for me, that represents a huge change in attitude. Until now, insofar as anybody spoke about men's health, it was generally, indeed about prostate. If you go to international conferences in men's health, it's all about prostate. But nothing wrong with that. It's a very important topic, but that's not all. And there was also the literature, the writing and the policies that we did have, or the practices we did have, talked about men not doing things. Men don't go to the doctor, men don't take care of themselves, men don't, all that kind of stuff. So what's exciting for me, Greg, is that this document says we must now look for man-friendly health services, which is slightly different. One journalist kept saying to me, but why do men keep dropping the ball? And I was saying, but man-friendly services. And she wanted to write a document on, a little article on men dropping the ball. And I was saying, but who's throwing the ball to them? And what this man-friendly bit does means that everybody listening can go to, women and men can go to any health service, doctor or community health, who notoriously don't do much for men, but go to any health service and say, okay, the government says you should be man-friendly. Tell me what you're doing for my man, or tell me what you're doing for me as a man, or tell me what you're doing for me as my as a father, or what you're doing for my boys, or what effort are you making as a health service to do things for men. That's what's one of the exciting things about the document for me, Greg.
Because I think, John, would you agree there's a lot of evidence that when services do make that effort to be men-friendly, then men's are queuing up round the block. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. Those of us who work with men, that's women and men who work with men, when they hear this cliche that people turn out saying men don't talk, sometimes they laugh because they say men talk far too much if you give them a chance in the right context, you know.
I mean, we've got Phil from Dads in Distress here in the studio, and Phil, you'd probably agree that the guys that come along to your meetings, it's probably hard to shut them up at the end of the night, right?
It is, absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Once they realise that it is a safe place to talk, it's hard to stop them.
Yeah, and John, of course, it's not just doctors we're talking about here. Obviously, you would be talking about health quite holistically, about a broad range of social determinants, about fathers, about older men, about separated dads, and the impacts of lots of different of the family law system, of lots of different systems on men in their lives, not just going to see doctors about medical issues. Is that right?
Well, but you see, every family knows that health, when you think of your kids, and every family knows that health is not just about going to the doctor. It's about what we in an academic world might call the environment. You know, it's the context of, for example, the child's life. Are they bullied at school? Is the teacher nice to them at school? Is the school itself pleasant? Is the transport decent? Can you afford to give them enough food and buy them what they need for school? All those things are very important in health, and if you don't have them, then it affects the mental and physical health of the child. Every family knows that. It's just that we've medicalized health, and we began to think that it's only about going to see a doctor, and that's completely ridiculous. What's nice about the document, the discussion document, is that it includes all that. I mean, the context of men's lives, men as fathers, gay men, their context of life, older men, isolated older men, etc. But I don't want to hog all this, because what Bill was saying about Dads in Distress, and that program is such a good program. I think if the listeners haven't heard more about that, they should, because that's a very good example of program that should be supported by the government and by all of us, because it helps a particular group of men who've been ignored for a long time.
Can you describe exactly what's going on in these community forums around the country? What are the issues that the men themselves are raising?
To be honest, it's very varied, and that's maybe a good thing, because you take a random collection of men and they'll talk about anything. But when I mentioned, I wasn't being dismissive of prostate, because when I got to Grafton, through the rain...
yes, you paddled there on a rowboat, didn't you?
We landed in an airstrip that was like on a lake, but the round the table coming was a whole round in that discussion, a whole table of men from the prostate support group. These are men who have experienced prostate intervention and have often been, quite frankly, damaged by it, but they're there to support one another. It was quite lovely, and they were there to lobby and to make sure that the government didn't just listen to the need for interventions about prostate, but also was the government would be concerned about those men who sometimes, let's face it, are rendered impotent or incontinent by prostate interventions. And one can only imagine how difficult that is, but it was great that those guys were there supporting one another. And that's one thing the government has had to see, is that projects like the Shed projects, movements like the Shed movement across Australia, show that, and this, the prostate groups of men and others, show that men will do things about their health given the slightest encouragement.
And what are some of the other issues, but things people have been talking about besides prostate? Any of are there any issues? For example, are people raising issues around men as fathers or as separated fathers that may be relevant to some of the listeners to Dads on the Air?
Well, yes, I was invited, like some other people, to the to talk to the senator, because it was a Senate inquiry, and that was fairly typical of one of the sets of voices that we could hear across the country, and I think the senator involved was a bit overwhelmed by the amount of men from all over the place saying that the law system, for example, the family courts, really damage men's health and are not equitable at all, and has a damaging effect on the health of the men as well as the children involved. So there's been that kind of voice. There's been a voice about isolated older men, and I'm glad to say that there's been Aboriginal men saying, for example, there's a bit of an emphasis, dangerous emphasis, I think, in some areas, and I hope it doesn't come out in the policy, about men's health means do exercise, don't smoke and don't drink, and eat 5 vegetables a day or whatever. And at one of the forums, an Aboriginal man stood up and said, this is true, it's very important, I can't afford that. And he sat down. And the minister was there, and she had to hear this, and I think it's very important that people realize that health can't just be telling people to behave better. They have to look at the context of their life. So Aboriginal men spoke at places I've been at. Older men spoke. Gay men spoke. Of course, because of the nature of it, we didn't hear much from boys, because it is male health we're talking about. But some people would speak about the importance of good environments, supportive environments for boys at schools, and not really supporting the health of boys as they might. It's very diverse, and that in itself, I think, is part of the message.
Now, this is Nicola Roxon we're talking about, isn't it?
Yes,
Health Minister. Right. Look, lobbyists around the country for years, and it's been a bit of a concern of this program over the years, has directly linked the high death rate amongst separated dads to the conduct of the child support agency, the bullying and harassment that goes on, and the financial difficulties that are imposed upon them. Has that been an issue in this?
It certainly was, at least implied at the... The senator had to listen to that when he was listening. But in the forums, to be honest, I've, of course, Tony Miller, who's a wonderful advocate, as you know, for dads in distress, was clear about this and had some very poignant, very clear examples precisely about the distress and even suicide of men separated. So it was raised, and other people have said it too. But I have to tell yourselves and the listeners that, of course, although it's admirable the government is has got these discussions going, it's clearly just touching, it's just the tip of the iceberg. Those are forums, and some men manage to come along in the evenings and maybe at some distance, and so they give their point of view. So at least the government's an idea of some of these problems, but we can't expect all the issues to have been properly aired. It's up to lobbyists, like I hope some people are listening, to speak on behalf of men and men's groups, and particular men's needs.
One of the issues before us has been the actual death rate, the daily death rate of the child support agency, and various lobby groups have claimed at least 3 clients of the agency die every day. From information obtained under Freedom of Information, we estimate the actual number of clients dying each day is around 12 a day. Has there been any specific discussion that the government should release these statistics?
Sadly, I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that. The only statistics which people turn out, and I'm one of them, is to say in Australia, 5 men a day kill themselves and 1 woman. And now the causes of that, you know, although some of us have tried to look at that, it's people look at how men kill themselves, and but they don't go to seek help. That's what people say. But to actually look at why men kill themselves is not been not been seriously addressed.
Do you think that there is room for improvement in the, I guess, the data collection around the issue of suicide and about coroner's inquiries and investigations, so that some of these causal factors can be sort of teased out? Because at the moment, as you say, we know how many men and women kill themselves, but we don't really know a lot more than that about why they are doing that. Do you have any suggestions of what could be put in place to sort of tease some of that data out, so that...
Well, I'm pleased to say something positive there, Greg. Colleagues in the Central Coast have been working on something called the Suicide Prevention, Suicide Safety Network, for over a decade, a community-based project that works with all kinds of service providers in the community, totally admirable, and has been from the beginning involved with the coroner there, and he has been very good, and that group, himself included, but the coronavirus, the whole group, in trying to get the country to record more accurately the causality of deaths such as this one. And it looks like some progress. There's been a national meeting about this with coroners, and it seems they've been listening to this kind of point of view and the practical experience of people on the Central Coast who are saying, Central Coast of New South Wales, I'm talking now, of course, who've been saying, we need accurate data, and this is how to do it. And so there is a move in that direction, and hopefully that will bring something to the attention, somehow, this tragedy to the attention of the public.
Well, that's really interesting to hear, John, because I've heard from the Child Support Agency only a week and a half ago that they're willing to look at the suicide rate within their clients, but they need a directive from the coroner.
I mean, the national coroner, but yeah, you could perhaps, people could contact the Central Coast, and John Ems is the name of the coroner, but I'd be very happy to, colleagues like Anthony Smith have been working on this and for a decade now, and they've got real information there and real strategies of how to go about this, and it won't be perfect, but it will be definitely a move in the direction you're implying. And a population health approach, now this is me as an academic speaking, would say, come on, let's look at what's happening. Let's not be shy of, if there's a relationship between tragic death and separation from children, let's look at it. We're supposed to be an open society, and in a scientific way, let's look at what's happening. So I hope we'll move in that direction.
There are very clear cases and very well-documented cases of magistrates who have called on the Child Support Agency to attend inquests into men's death, and the CSA has claimed privacy legislation to refuse to show up to those inquiries, and the magistrates have lamented the lack of cooperation from a government agency. Do you think that requires a change in legislation or a directive from the National Coroner?
I think both of these. I think in all of men's health stuff like this, we're dealing with cultural attitudes and popular assumptions, but these are often influenced by legislation or by directives from above, as it were. So I think both in this case, it's wonderful that folks like yourself are raising these issues constantly, moving the issue, and it's important that people like me also hear this, so that given the opportunity I can, in a modest way, because I'm not being modest here, and in an honest way, I don't have much influence, but to bring this to the attention of the authorities, that we need such, that would be a very practical step to improve men's health.
Does this raise another issue that perhaps one of the problems that the government may face is the issue of siloing, that they're looking at this as a health policy within the Department of Health, when really a lot of the factors that impact on the health of men fall under other portfolios, fall under families and communities, fall under transport, fall under education, and do we need some sort of coordinating body that can actually pull all these silos together in a holistic way? Would you like to speak a bit about that?
Oh, well, boy, would I love such things. In a very small way, the Australasian Men's Health Forum tries to show that health is not just going to the doctor and medical stuff. It's about boys at school. It's about relationships. It's about isolated people. And it's about the food they eat or can't afford to eat. It's about discrimination, which gay men or, for example, Aboriginal men experience. And we need such a body. But, of course, what we have now as a peak body is a voluntary association, and it does its best. But it's clear that, to be fair to the Department of Health and Ageing, they themselves acknowledge some of this and say, we know that health is not just medicine and going to the doctor, but we have very little authority. We have no authority in these other agencies. But I'm saying to them that they do have a moral authority, and if the Department of Health and Ageing and the minister involved is pushing an idea of health which is wider than clinical, being free from some disease, then they can have an influence on people and move the thing towards a wonderful way. We would have such a clearinghouse, a coordinating body, an office of men. I mean, with such a thing for women, why wouldn't there be an office for men that would actually see health in a holistic way?
Yeah, it sounds like a very sensible idea to all of us here. So, John, we've got about 45 seconds left. Do you have any final words about the development of this policy, perhaps about the direction you'd like to see it go in?
Yes. Yes, as I say, I would like people... Three things. Thanks for giving me the chance. I would like everybody listening to ask any health service how they are man-friendly. I would ask them to look for the policies or to write in about the policy saying health policy must support men in their roles in life, as fathers, as providers, as workers, as etc., as retired men. And finally, I would want absolutely the policy not just to say things, but to put its money where its mouth is and to actually have some plan of action that we could have someone supporting men's health in every area health service in the country. At least that. So some resources put towards this.
Fantastic. That was Professor John McDonald from the Australasian Men's Health Forum and the University of Western Sydney. Thank you so much for coming on Dad's on the Air today.
No, thank you very much for listening.
Thanks. Have a good day.
Bye-bye now.
Feeling I ever felt.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air. On the line now we have, from the Hunter Valley of New South Wales, John Roberts. And John is wears a number of hats. First of all, he works for the Benevolent Society. That's his sort of day-to-day job. And he's also chair of the local coordinating committee for the National Men's Health Gathering that's happening in October this year. John, welcome to Dad's on the Air.
Thank you.
It's great to have you.
Allowing me to join you today.
It's great to have you with us. Do you want to, first of all, talk a little bit about the National Men's Health Gathering that's happening in October?
Okay, look, the National Men's Health Gathering is something that... this is really the first time the gathering has taken place, but it's certainly not the first time the three conferences that are running within the gathering have taken place. For example, it takes place every 2 years, and the last one was...
in Adelaide, I believe.
In Adelaide, and that was the 8th National Men's Health Conference. And at the same time, the... that was the 7th, and the 4th National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Male Health Convention took place at the same time, as did the 4th National Men and Family Relationship Forum. So this year we put them all under the one banner of the gathering, as a national gathering discussing men's health.
So it's covering a broad range of issues for men's health in general, Indigenous men's health, and also men and family relationships. Where is it being held?
Now, this is being held at the University of Newcastle at Callanan, and we chose that venue because it's really just only 2 hours up the road from Sydney, and has good access from the motorways and the airport. And
I believe that area, the sort of Newcastle, Central Coast, Hunter Valley area, there's actually a lot of stuff, I guess, in terms of grassroots programs for men and fathers happening in that area. Would that be accurate?
Yes. Look, there are quite a number of grassroots programs happening. Indeed, my own program, which is the Mars Project, but we can talk about that a bit later if
sure.
we have time.
Yeah, I'd love to.
But there's certainly a great deal of work being done across the Hunter and Central Coast in terms of trying to engage men with services in the community. And this is seen as a pretty important thing to rebuilding our communities and building strength in our communities.
Do you want to give an example of...
the health gathering is really all about.
Absolutely. Have you got an example of the sort of program you're talking about that might be, directing their services towards men or fathers in a specific way?
Look, just an example, and there's lots of different places, but one of the examples is, for example, the Men's Shed movement. And it's really going ahead now. For example, on the Central Coast, 18 months ago, we had one Men's Shed. By Christmas, we expect to have 10.
That's incredible.
And across the Hunter right now, we've got about 16 sheds. Now, these are in various stages of development, but 16 groups of men trying to function in a shed.
So for those who've never heard of the shed movement, can you just briefly explain what it is, how it works?
Well, the shed is, it's basically a group of guys in the community trying to find a place to get together to talk about blokes things whilst having a cup of tea, whilst doing a bit of woodwork, whilst doing a bit of metalwork. There are lots of the sheds have actually got a little garden beside them, so sometimes they grow plants and vegetables. And the shed movement is a place where guys can gather without getting under their partner's feet, without having to sit in front of a poker machine or go to a bar, and they can just talk about it. Originally, they started out for the older men, but it's really quite exciting now because lots of younger men and even young boys are going along, and there are mentoring programs that are now starting. So some of our older men are now acting as role models for these younger guys, and that's really, really important. That's about men's health and well-being. That's about young boys growing into men in the community. And it gives them a sense of giving back, if you like, to the community, as well as a sense of camaraderie, particularly for a lot of guys who their only social outlet was their work, and now they're not working, and there's nothing else except a club or a bar, and it's become a very important place for a lot of men, and I think that's why the whole movement is growing so much.
So obviously you probably expect a very exciting gathering in October, where I guess a lot of the service providers, but also possibly the guys who to come along to services like that to the sheds, may come along to this conference and, you know, talk about their ideas and the programs that they're running in their local communities. What can you tell us a bit more of the specifics of the conference, possibly some of the speakers you might be having or the topics that may be being covered there?
Yes. One of the main objectives of the gathering that we're trying to do through all the papers that are being presented, and we've got about 22 abstracts already presented, is to try and make sure that all our presentations are about state of the art, about where we're going, about what the future holds and how we can make changes, so that delegates to the conference can leave the conference understanding or hanging on to an idea that they can take back to their particular region or area that they're coming from. And for my own personal objective is that if every delegate, and we're hoping that it's going to be 600 delegates there across the 4 days, if every delegate can take just one idea back, we can actually make a systemic change in our communities. And so we're encouraging all of our presenters to try and present a way forward, state-of-the-art, best practice in terms of working with men in our communities to build stronger families and stronger communities. And that will come about if with healthy men who feel confident and have a high esteem.
We're talking with John.
A lot of the issues about suicide prevention, and we're trying to address some of the family violence. We're trying to address anger. We're trying to make our men healthier.
Can you explain what the Mars Project is all about?
The Mars Project is, well, Mars means
men accessing resources and services.
Yep, men accessing resources and services. It's funded by the state government. It's a one-off bit of an experiment. It's only a four-year project, but it was about trying to address services and organisations in the community and making them more accessible for men. It was about trying to get the guy to go to the doctor before his leg falls off. It was about trying to get the young new dad to go along to parents and children's groups, which tended to be just for mum and bubs. It was to try and encourage the young bloke to go along and the young dad to go along and get engaged with that process.
And schools as well, I suppose?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, where it was always mum who went to school and did school business, we're trying to encourage dads to go along.
And that's been really well received, I understand, at schools.
Yes, it is. And the schools have been very helpful in encouraging that. And I think that's made a difference to a lot of dads, because suddenly they don't feel that they're secondary to this thing. There's a lot of sort of sense that, you know, it's all about mum and the babies, and what am I doing around here?
Oh, no, I just feel like a shag on a rock, so to speak.
Exactly.
Look, why is this conference, or this series of conferences, really so important, do you think? Personally, having watched all this for quite a number of years, it seems a really significant step forward that we're now seeing conferences on men's issues rather than the endless conferences on women's issues, which we've become very accustomed to. Why is it so important?
Look, I my own opinion, and in talking to many, many people, practitioners out there in the field, it's important to get a balance. You know, I belong to a number of domestic violence committees, for example, and, you know, domestic violence committees have tended to be in the past the bastion of feminism. And I understand why. but the message that I carry is that maybe men can be 50% of the solution rather than always being perceived, particularly by often by the media, as the problem. And usually that's because when an incident happens, it gets high profile in press. Now, I'm often accused of trying to pull the pendulum back, get rid of feminism, and that's really not my objective at all. What I'm trying to do is create a gender balance within our community so that men can have equal access to services as women. We can all probably think of three or four women's medical centres around wherever it is that we live, but think for a moment on how many men's only medical services.
Non-existent, really.
And it's about trying to bring this balance about. If you like, following on from the idea that men can be 50% of the solution here, you know, like after all, there is almost 50% of us in the community, and maybe we should have equivalent services. And that's what it's about.
And John, would you agree that, like with the example of domestic violence, but also across a range of issues, that the health and well-being of men doesn't just impact on the men themselves, but has broad flow-ons into the family and the community. So helping men helps, in a sense, everyone. Would you agree with that?
Oh, look, absolutely. And that's what drives me, and indeed is driving the Benevolent Society, who auspice my project, is that, and the Benevolent Society has always been focused on children and families, and this is about stepping into another part of things that the man is really, really important within the family. And it's, if we've got a healthy bloke, then we're going to have a healthy relationship, and with his children, with his partner, and with his whole community. And I firmly believe that this is going to enable us to build stronger communities, and where we are now in society, our communities are going to have to be stronger. With the whole sort of financial situation and examples with the number of natural disasters that have been happening around us, not just only in Australia but around the world, we need to build stronger communities. And I think sort of focusing on the health and well-being of our men will enable that to happen.
We're speaking with John Roberts from the Benevolent Society in the Hunter Valley. John, we're going to go to a music track, but before we do, do you want to just wind up the discussion about the conference and give our listeners a website or phone number, contact details for anyone who's interested in finding out more about the Men's Health Gathering?
Yes, the best way to find it is go straight onto the web, look for workingwithmen.org.au. Working with men is all one word, .org.au. And there's the details of all the themes for the conference, the requests for the submissions of abstracts if you want to be involved in presenting a paper or putting forward your views or work that you're doing in the community.
And what's the closing date for those abstracts? I believe it's coming up very soon.
Yes, it's currently the closing date is
the 1st of May, I believe?
Yes, the 31st of May. But if we don't have enough of the particular abstracts, maybe we'll extend that. But at the moment, they're coming in, and, well, it's quite exciting reading some of them.
Well, look, I guess we'd all encourage anyone out there who's running programs, large or small, for men or boys, males in any way, to go to workingwithmen.org.au and have a look around and hopefully submit an abstract and come along and present the work that you're doing so that we can all share those ideas and build better services for men and the community. So we'll be back with more of John Roberts after this track, and John, we'll talk a bit more about the services that you run with the Benevolent Society.
Okay,
we'll be back. Used to stare in your
You don't have to drink right now, but you can dip your feet every once in a little while.
So fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air. We still have with us on the line from the Hunter Valley of New South Wales, John Roberts from the Benevolent Society. Welcome back, John.
Thank you.
Would you want to tell us a bit more about the MARS program, the Men Accessing Resources and Services program that you run through the Benevolent Society?
Yeah, look, I guess anybody who's sort of committed to their project could talk about these things for days, but look, I'll just touch on a few of the resources and initiatives that I'm engaged with. And some of these resources are available on the Benevolent Society website, which is www.bensoc.org.au, and there's a little box up in the top right-hand corner. Just put in men, and it'll go away to my project and give you some information. But some of these resources, let's sort of touch on a couple. One, I've developed a bloke's card, which is, it came to me after going to a number of conferences, and all of the service providers out there, everybody has a card. And I suddenly thought, gee, a guy's got to carry around 30 cards in his pocket. And in a moment of a bit of strife or stress, which card does he pick up? And it suddenly dawned on me, why don't I just put everybody's name on the one card?
So what is it? It's like a credit card size card?
Yeah, it's card a credit card size little card that sits in people's wallet. And the exciting thing is that they're being given out by bouncers outside clubs to young blokes queuing to go into the clubs. They're being given out by DVLOs, that's the domestic violence liaison officers within the police when they're called out. They're being given out by, they're on most Centrelink counters, and lots of community organisations are giving them out, and recently we've sent some up into Queensland and some to Victoria, so they're going all over the place. My view is, for a 10 cent little card, if we can just make one guy think about calling a number before he perhaps attempts to do some self-harm or alternatively harm his partner, then for 10 cents it's got to be worth it. I actually have evidence that's come back from relationships counsellors within Centrelink and other groups, not-for-profit organisations,
mm-hmm.
who have said to me that they've actually counselled blokes, and blokes have said, if I didn't have the card, I wouldn't be here today.
That's fantastic. So obviously that card's really getting around, is quite widespread, and you can that can be downloaded from the website, is that right?
Yes, it can be downloaded from the website. Of course, it's not sort of printed in a little card side on the card size on the website, and you can get those by just sending an email through to the website and requesting, you know, 100 cards to be sent to wherever you are, and we'll endeavour to do that whilst my project is able to fund that.
Fantastic. Now, you've also produced a bloke's booklet, is that right? You want to tell us a bit about that?
It's a bloke's book. It's not new. There's other people have produced a bloke's book of varying styles in the past in different places in New South Wales. What I've tried to do here is develop a standard format that any group, whether you're in Parks or Dubbo or Northern Rivers, you can change all the names and addresses in there for all the services to do with blokes in your own area and produce the thing. And I have a bit of a formula which encourages community groups to take that on and get a local printer to print them up and produce them. And really the idea of the book, although lots of blokes tell me they're fun to read because it has little stories in it about blokes' own stories, but it's also for service organisations. And it came out of getting about one phone call every week from some service organisation. Let me give you an example. A manager of a women's refuge rang me one week and said, look, I'm looking after a mum and her kids here, but she really loves her husband, and he's got a bit of an anger management problem, and she really wants to do something, and she's asked me to help, and I don't know where to go to help men. I'm only used to helping women.
Jeez, that's a common story, isn't it?
The message to me was, we really need to get some resource out there into services so that when that call comes through, they can go, yep, this is where the bloke can get financial advice, yep, this is where he can go for accommodation, yep, this is where he can go for counselling.
Where
the bloke's book came from.
Do you expect problems with men to accelerate with the global financial crisis, rising unemployment and so on?
Yes. Personally, I do, and as an organisation within the Benevolent Society, we feel that that is going to be the case with our families, not just the blokes, but with our whole families. Because, of course, if the bloke is impacted and loses his job and therefore his capacity to look after his family the way he wants, then his self-esteem is going to go down because there's not going to be many jobs around to get, and his whole sort of worth, the way the man values himself, and then that often leads to frustration and anger, and then, you know, we're going to get into a very difficult situation. So what we're trying to do is, like a lot of other organisations in the community and other big charities, we're trying to ramp up to be able to address this almost tsunami that's probably going to hit us. And it's very difficult because a lot of organisations, their funds come from investments or contributions, philanthropic contributions, and there's not a lot of that around. That's going to get tighter as well, yet the demand's going to increase. So such programs on the ground to focus on the health and well-being of our men, because that's going to impact in their relationships and in their families and within their communities, are absolutely going to be vitally important.
Fantastic. We're out of time, unfortunately. John, we'd love to have you back on the program again to talk a bit more about your work and maybe promote the conference once again when we get closer to October. If you'd like to come on, you'd be more than welcome. Thank you for your time today. And once again, the website for the Benevolent Society is www.bensoc.org.au. And the website conference website is workingwithmen.org.au. John Roberts, it's been a pleasure having you on Dads on the Air this morning.
And thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. We'll be back in a moment.
Okay, bye-bye.
It's hard to argue when you won't stop me. Still misbehaves and it keeps digging my own grave with my hands open and my eyes.
And we're back. We're talking to one of the heroes of the men's and fathers movement in Australia, Sue Price from the Men's Rights Agency. Are you there, Sue?
Morning, John.
Not every day you get called a hero, is it?
What happened to heroin?
Heroin, sorry, darling.
I'm an old-fashioned person. You must know that by now. Yeah, I understand the political correctness of the term.
Oh, I didn't mean it in that way at all. Well, one of the heroines of the...
No problem with it. I'm only being funny, I hope.
Right.
We're talking about this rally the girls have got on Sunday.
Yeah, pray tell, it's on Sunday, is it? This coming Sunday.
It is, and you've got rallies going on in New South Wales at the Cook and Phillip Park, Yerong Street, East Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
Victoria, Rathdown Street, Carlton, next to the museum, and South Australia on the steps of Parliament House. And you have people like in New South Wales, you have Liz Mulliner talking, Professor Leslie Lang, Barbara Biggs, this is the woman who seems to be organising all this, Kat Gander, head of the Women's Refuge Movement, and Robin Cottrell-Jones. And in Victoria, you've got Phil Cleary, Sarah Vassily, a lawyer working with women primarily, and a few others. You know, it's sort of mostly women's issues. It's mostly concerned with domestic violence issues and sexual abuse.
So what percentage?
Just in South Australia, you've got Anne Bressington, the independent MP, is also emceeing it, which I find is a little disappointing. But then maybe she's been convinced that this is a general rally to protect children, whereas I see it as being a general rally to further defame men and accuse men of being the only abusers of children.
Well, I would suspect that Anne Bressington's probably been quite strategic and might make a few of the same points that you or we at Dads on the Air might make as part of her hosting process there. I wouldn't write her off by any means. I think she's very sympathetic to men's issues and the issues of false allegations and all of the things that probably won't be being covered at these rallies.
I do agree with that, but I don't know whether that message will have got through to Anne at all unless someone's spoken to her. And I do think that they have been more than half clever in the way they've put this together.
So how are they selling this? Are they selling this as a wonderful gender-neutral, you know, care-about-the-children rally?
This is how it starts off, and it's a very... it's not vague, it's very specific. It says, they're saying it deals with child custody, access and shared care in cases of suspected domestic violence or sexual abuse. And those are the only two categories that they're dealing with. They don't talk about physical assault or neglect or you know, general abuse of children. And we do know that mothers are by far the majority of abusers in those circumstances. And they give a sample of the abuse that they're talking about, and they have an in memoriam column where they describe perhaps a dozen or ten deaths of children, all killed by their fathers. They don't mention even one woman who has killed a child. One of the entries is the one off the Westgate Bridge just recently, where the father tragically threw his daughter over. But they don't mention that less than 12 months prior, a woman strapped an 18-month-old baby son to her breast and jumped as well. So, you know, it's unbalanced, totally unbalanced. And when you look at the petition itself, the last paragraph is to review the legal system in which the very lives of children are put shamefully at risk. We have no argument about that. But to dispel through legislation the current court myth that a violent husband can be a good father. The current system is ill-equipped to deal with psychological needs of the children. And they're trying to promote the notion that Alastair Nicholson put forward, that it should be the person who's accused of the abuse has to prove their innocence, which, of course, is changing our whole concept of justice and our judicial process. We do still cling to a presumption that people are innocent until they're proven guilty. But in the family court now, they're pushing to have it turned round the other way, so that a person, if the accusation is made, the person themselves who's accused will have to try and prove their innocence.
Which, of course, is almost impossible, as there are no witnesses.
That's right, absolutely right. Well, a lot of this is on innuendo and suspicion and you know, false allegations that are made. So how on earth does a father who's thus accused prove his innocence? It's almost impossible for him to do so.
How can women in a Marxist feminist institution like the family law courts be so discontent? Doesn't everything go all their way already?
Well, I think so, John. They've certainly worked very hard over the last 30 years to disenfranchise dads from their children's lives, and it seems they are not satisfied now with the changes that were made by the Howard government, as we knew they probably wouldn't be, and this is the culmination of the work they've been carrying out over the last 3 years to try and change and roll back the changes that were brought in to acknowledge that both parents are actually important in their children's lives, not just the mother.
What do you feel about, in the media, there's lots of stories lately in regards to the family court, and there seems to be two camps of magistrates, one that believes that Skype is a tool which can allow parents to keep in contact with their children overseas, and there's another camp of magistrates that say that, you know, nothing replaces face-to-face you know, contact with your children. What do you feel about that?
I don't disagree that Skype is a useful tool, but it's an additional tool. It doesn't replace actual physical contact. It's a wonderful invention for, you know, keeping in touch on a short-term basis with people, but certainly not. There's no substitute for the hugs and the kisses and the story reading and the time actually spent with a parent and child. So, you know, they can't use that as being a contributory reason for making their decisions.
It's a bit of a lucky dip, though, isn't it? It depends which magistrate's court you walk into on the day as to what the decision is going to be made.
Well, that's always been the case. I think you'll find that if you give the same case to five different judges or magistrates, you'll get five different decisions, because it is such a personalised and opinion-based decision-making process. And of course, those values that you create as you grow or as you develop are the ones that any magistrate or judge is going to take into the court with them.
And do you think that this? I'm going back to this petition that the organisers of this rally have put together. I mean, they say that there is a current court myth that a violent husband can be a good father. Do you think that's true? Do you think you have court decisions where they're saying, well, this husband's been violent and abusive, but we'll grant him access anyway? I thought that the new laws were very specific about, in cases of violence and abuse, that the shared presumption would not apply.
Well, that is, yes. It prevents the equal shared responsibility part of the presumption, but it still doesn't prevent a judge giving some sort of contact to the other parent, the father perhaps in this case. You know, decisions have been made where there has been abuse between the adults, but there's been no sign of any abuse from the parent to the child. So contact has been allowed,
and
as it should be. You know, to have abuse between adults, it's regrettable and it shouldn't happen, but it doesn't mean to say, it doesn't automatically follow on that someone who is abusive towards their partner is also abusive towards their child.
Right, absolutely. And what do you think about this rally in general? Are you thinking that it's going to... obviously there are a lot of things in that, you know, we would all support. I mean, no one wants to see abusive partners, being granted access to children, and we would all support a lot of the general aims. But you obviously think that there's another agenda to this rally.
Well, it's clearly another agenda. It's not what I think. It's there for everyone to read and see. If you agree with petitioning the government for changes on the basis that fathers are violent towards their children, but mothers are perfect, that is wrong. It's manifestly wrong, and I wouldn't support such a notion. certainly I will support the notion that children should be protected from people who are going to cause them harm. Like, if you look at the statistical evidence of the harm that mothers cause, for example, you know, and your own Greg Andreessen has discovered that figures for child homicides were wrongly presented by the Australian Institute of Criminology. They were claiming that 7 homicides involved a mother and 15 involved male family members. He disputed their findings and proved them incorrect, and in actual fact, 11 mothers were involved in the homicide of their children, 5 de facto male members, and 5 biological fathers. Now, that's a very big difference. And what we need to be saying to these people, these rallyists, that we would support your notion that the courts need to look very carefully at the violence that's committed by parents, but we want them to look at the violence that's committed by both fathers and mothers, not just fathers.
Look, we're running out of time, Sue, so can we just sum up? Do you think that this rally is a sign that the court is no longer taking so seriously all of the false allegations and the hysteria around domestic violence and so-called violent males, and that this is a sort of backlash of that?
I think the court has always taken a fairly subjective view of domestic violence, and they've always stood back a little bit from it because they do understand a lot of the domestic violence applications are falsely created and made to give an advantage to a party when they come to family court. So I think the courts have always had that. In actual fact, the latest legislation strengthened the provisions for the court to take into account domestic violence. And the people, you would think these people would be happy that it did that, but of course it requires that the domestic violence be more adequately proven than was currently happening. So, you know, they're trying to roll back the system. They don't want fathers to have equal shared care. They want to still maintaining control of their children's lives.
We're out of time. We've been talking with Sue Price from the Men's Rights Agency, and we'd also like to thank our earlier guests, John McDonald and John Roberts, Australia's leading health men's health experts. We'll be back next week. We're dead on the air. We're dead on the air.